is Jim Sector, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Today, my special guest is the founder and director of the Disclosure Project, a lifetime member of Alpha Omega Alpha, the nation's most prestigious medical honor society. He is an emergency physician and former chairman of the Department of Emergency Medicine at Caldwell Memorial Hospital in North Carolina. In addition to heading the Disclosure Project, he's also been supervising a worldwide search for alternative energy sources, specifically those known as zero-point or over-unity devices, with the plan to identify and develop systems which will eliminate the need for fossil fuels. It's my great pleasure to welcome to the Dynamic Duo Dr. Stephen Greer. Welcome aboard, Stephen.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm most interested in your research about alternative sources of energy and how they might possibly be related to the events of 9/11. Could you tell our audience what you found about alternative energy systems, their existence, and suppression of information regarding them?
Well, as your listeners can see, if they go to disclosureproject.org, we have identified at this point over 400 military and intelligence witnesses to events and classified projects that have been run illegally since the 1950s. And many of these involve the tracking or reconnaissance of objects which the public would call UFOs, except that's not what they are. They're not unidentified and they don't fly. But they deal with very advanced energy and propulsion systems. The research on this is quite stunning, actually. If you look at Jane's Defense Weekly and Nick Cook, he did a expose of the fact that through the 40s and up to the early 50s, there were classified projects, projects that were open source, until that time, that then became so-called black projects. And those projects are extremely well-funded with taxpayer dollars that extract energy from what's called the zero-point energy field or the quantum vacuum flux field. And without getting into a lot of arcane physics, basically these are systems that extract energy from the space in the room where the object is operating or a generator is operating, because every cubic centimeter of space has at least enough energy to run the Earth for a day. The bottom line is that we have not needed fossil fuels and oil and gas since at least the 1950s. And this is a, in my opinion, and the opinion of many of the military people who've been involved with these projects, a criminal enterprise, because they have deliberately suppressed this information from the public and kept us, as George W. Bush would say, addicted to oil for over 50 years. And this absolutely has to change. I mean, the only reason we're decamped in the Middle East, we're not there for the scenery or for the gorgeous camels or the beautiful sand dunes. We're there because, quote, our strategic interest is that, let me translate that for people, it's oil, O-I-L. And the bottom line is that the entire petrodollar oil-based centralized economy, which 200 or 300 individuals and corporations benefit from, are completely unnecessary. But, you know, look, when you're talking about a $200 trillion asset base that somebody owns, there's a lot of incentive to let that be controlled and not rock the boat. These technologies we're talking about are technologies which, for which there is dispositive proof, for which we can prove there has been active suppression, and that this is a criminal enterprise. And you don't want to talk about the biggest mafiosi or organized the RICO effort, the racketeering and influence corrupt organization in history. It's the group that deals with this. And this is why we feel that this needs to be disclosed. The public needs to understand what's really being kept secret at Lockheed Skunk Works and Northrop and SAIC and some of these other contracting companies. And these technologies need to begin to come out to be used for peaceful energy generation.
And I presume when you talk about this group that constitutes an ersatz mafia, you're including all the multinational oil companies, Mobil, Exxon, and all those, which Dick Cheney brought together in his energy policy meetings early in this administration, where he won't even allow us to know the names of those with whom he met.
Yes, but there's plenty of blame to go around. I'll remind your listeners that back in the 90s, I personally briefed President Clinton's inner sanctum of his national security team, including his first CIA director. I spent 3 hours briefing him. He was in favor of ending secrecy on this issue. He said so publicly after I had met with him. President Clinton, after Lawrence Rockefeller, hosted him at his ranch in the Tetons with a lot of briefing material I had put together for the president, basically said, look, this is too hot a potato for me. And I was told by one of his good friends, who lives there in Minnesota, by the way, that this was something that he would not proceed with because of the security issues around it, meaning his personal security as president. So basically, you know, there's plenty of, there's been a lot of people asleep at the switch or who have not had the courage to stand up for the American people or for the earth, for that matter, for about 50 years. And this is why when Eisenhower left office in 1961, you know, it wasn't Abby Hoffman who said, beware the military-industrial complex. It was a conservative, a two-term president and five-star general. And he was not anti-military, but he had been stabbed in the bank. And one of the young men that worked with him in the White House in the last 2 years of Eisenhower's presidency told us that Eisenhower knew about these energy and propulsion systems, knew about these strange things that were zipping around that people called UFOs, that the president had lost completely control over this into the military-industrial work-for-other, as it's called, private sector, and this sort of cabal of big money and energy interests that have kept this secret. And people say, oh, come on, that's a huge conspiracy theory. I said, no, it's not a theory. It's just people conspire in their own interest. And when you're sitting on multi-trillion dollars in assets and you're at the top of the heap in terms of the geopolitical big monkey game, those people want to stay there, and they will do almost anything to keep that under control. Now, what's interesting is that if you go to our website, disclosureproject.org, you'll see that on May 9th, 2001, 4 months and 2 days before 9/11, we had a huge press conference in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club that was covered by the worldwide media. It was the most watched event in the history of the Internet at that time. And it was interesting because we had 22 military and intelligence whistleblowers talking about their own personal direct involvement in these sort of projects or events. And we had over 20,000 people fax letters to members of Congress to hold open hearings on this issue. And there were a number of Senate and House committees proceeding with investigating this. And then 9/11 took their eye off of that ball and onto the global terrorism issue. And so one of the interesting things about the timing of 9/11, and all I'll say is that it's an interesting coincidence, is that it derailed this whole effort by the Congress to look into what is arguably the most tightly held illegal secret program in the history of the United States or any other country for that matter.
That's extremely interesting. Do you relate your research to global warming in a general way?
Well, yes, certainly. There's a direct connection between the fact that we're now in this meltdown, literally, on this planet, when it's unnecessary. The good news is that we have the solutions. The bad news is that you have a lot of petro-Nazis keeping it secret, and that needs to change.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with my special guest, Dr. Stephen Greer. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest, Dr. Stephen Greer, has been supervising a worldwide search for alternative energy sources, specifically those known as zero-point or over-unity devices, with a plan to identify and develop systems that will eliminate the need for fossil fuels. Steve, this sounds a lot like what some of us have heard as cold fusion research. Is that related to it?
No, not really. I mean, cold fusion is one area that is interesting, although the industrialization of it looks like a very, very steep curve. These are systems that are rotating and sometimes counter-rotating electromagnetic systems. Some are solid state, some have moving parts that have to do with resonance frequencies. If you can visualize, for example, having a certain kind of nanocrystalline material, if you put the correct signal through that material at the correct resonance frequency, it will begin to resonate in such a way as it will perturb the structure of space around it and begin to emit more electricity than goes into it. it does not disrupt the laws of thermodynamics, because what the scientists have found is that the fabric of space, not outer space, but the space, say, in a room or outside your house, has this energy in a potential, what's called a quantum vacuum flux field. So these are quite sophisticated systems that would be freestanding, would generate energy without the need for a centralized electric power grid. Oops, there goes somebody's trillion-dollar basket of investments. But and also without coal or gas or oil. So this would completely stop global warming and pollution, but it would also enable the 6 billion people on Earth to live in a sustainable way without the zero-sum game of the current system. And that's the problem. The reason these things are kept secret isn't because they're trivial. They're kept secret and have had an enormously ruthless security put around them, because they would have such an enormous ability to change the status quo. Now, you know, my opinion is that the status quo needs to change. 150 years of the carbon era, smokestack industrial era, is long enough, and it's about as much as the Earth and humanity can take, both geopolitically and geophysically. But what we're saying is that a coalition of people need to come together to study this issue and support it. We are in the process of putting together an R&D project that would pull together the most brilliant scientific and engineering minds that we have identified to build up these systems for public release, basically bypassing the lock that the aerospace industry and these classified and illegally rogue-run programs that are very rogue have. And this is in no small measure related to the whole geopolitical mess we find ourselves in this post-9/11 environment. Again, I mean, the only reason that there is any real conflict between America and the Middle East, putting aside a moment our support for Israel, is the fact that we are there in a very dominant fashion, decamped with hundreds of thousands of troops in an area. And we're not, you know, look, we're not in the Congo, are we? We're not in Chile. We're there because it's the largest oil reserves in the world in both Iraq and Saudi Arabia and Iran. And I think that what you find is that these strategic interests, which are truly there from a conventional point of view, disappear when you understand that these technologies do exist. And as I said, I mean, if you go to our website, you will find that there are articles and materials from very mainstream physicists and military journals such as James Defense Weekly that have discussed this. And it's interesting that the mainstream media never covers this issue, and you begin to wonder why. Who the hell is muzzling them, you know, with all this noise about an inconvenient truth? Well, here's an inconvenient truth. My group briefed Al Gore's team as well as President Clinton's team when they were president and vice president of the United States. Why didn't they do an executive order to get control of these projects and bring them out to the public? I mean, there are some very hard questions that need to be asked of these leaders, and there's plenty of accountability to go around. What we're saying is time for us to say, enough with the politicians and the nonsense. We, the people, need to form a research and development effort that's very serious, properly funded. And by properly funded, I'm not talking about the billions of dollars that go into studying global warming, but maybe a few tens of millions of dollars that could go into actually building up these research projects so that these devices could begin to make their way out to the public with a strategic umbrella around it of people who understand that we've got to get this knowledge out and we've got to get operating systems out to the public, because it's very unlikely that the governments of the world, which are in the back pocket of this sort of power elite, are going to do it for us. We need to do it ourselves.
I find all that extremely interesting. Let me ask you, would it be correct for me to infer that given the massive motivation of gaining control of Middle Eastern oil, getting that pipeline built in northern Afghanistan and taking control of the Iraqi oil, which Cheney repeatedly described as the real prize because it's such high quality and so easy to remove from the ground, that 9/11 may have been, you know, orchestrated in order to provide a rationale for invading the Middle East?
Well, that's certainly possible. What's more likely is that it was allowed to happen. At any given time, if you look at the threat matrix that is coming into any national security study, there's a certain number, but if you stand down certain components so that that threat comes in, then you can justify other actions in a response. And so the people who look at this thing, and they think of it in a very teleologic, almost direct line way. It doesn't work that way. Really well thought through covert actions are extremely sophisticated, and there's usually four, five, six steps removed from the people who order it and what really happens. And this is certainly what we've seen on these other issues. So people who look into this need to have I would love to do a workshop sometime for people who are studying this issue, because it's very much more complex. You know, when I was personally briefing a sitting CIA director on these problems, he confessed to me that he was completely denied access and that there are all kinds of games being run to wall him off and wall off the president, Clinton at the time, from being able to have any control or knowledge of these so-called black projects. So, you know, there's this sort of assumption that there's this straight line connection, and it doesn't happen that way. It's much more sophisticated and worrisome because, you know, they may be very cunning in how they're doing this, and I think that people have to understand that that's the case. So the more likely thing, now the other point is people have to understand the Iraq mess. A lot of people, oh, what incompetence. It wasn't incompetence. This was planned chaos, because by taking, you have to remember, before 9/11, the French and the Russians and others were angling for lifting sanctions and allowing, therefore, the oil to be openly sold out of Iraq. The price of oil then would have gone from $25 to $30 a barrel back down to the $12 to $15 a barrel that it was during the Clinton administration. Well, by going into Iraq and creating all this chaos, they have caused the price of oil to go from in the 20s up to $70 a barrel. So planned chaos was very strategically valuable in the short term.
That's an excellent point. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Dr. Stephen Greer. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today, Dr. Stephen Greer, has been supervising a real worldwide search for alternative energy sources, with a plan to identify and develop systems that will eliminate the need for fossil fuels. He's been seen and heard on shows such as Larry King Live, CBS, BBC, NTV in Japan, Sightings, Encounters, Coast to Coast AM, and dozens of other TV and radio programs. Steve, a news report coming across right now says the White House is in panic mode over GOP revolt on Iraq because so many senators are defecting from the government's preferred position, and that they're viewing this as a crack in the dike, and National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley is most concerned when the benchmarks failed to be met, and not one of them has been satisfied. And the first one, of course, being the passing of the hydrocarbon law that was going to privatize some 80% of the Iraqi oil fields for exploitation by Enron and Mobil and all the other multinational giants. It seems more and more obvious that your point is extremely well taken, that we're there really to exploit the oil, as well, of course, as for the benefit of Israel by destroying other nations that might rival it for political influence in the region. And ultimately, of course, in relation to the neoconservative agenda for the project for a new American century, the idea of creating a worldwide empire.
Well, I think that, you know, we have to remember that, as the Chinese saying goes, unless we change directions, we're likely to end up where we're going. And nobody is looking, where in the hell are we going? And it's not just with this misadventure in Iraq, but it's really 50 years of out-of-control covert programs really run by a kleptocracy of transnational financial and corporate interests that have compartmentalized projects in the military and intelligence sector. And I want to point out that the vast majority of people at the Pentagon and even in the intelligence community that I deal with are big supporters of what I'm trying to do, because they realize that they're cannon fodder for these gray old men and their wars and their games. And I think that we have to understand that even when I was at the Pentagon briefing the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, and I had a personal long-term meeting with the head of intelligence for the Joint Staff, the so-called J2 position, that these men, a general and an admiral respectively, were out of the loop and not allowed to know about the projects that my group knew about. Now, of course, my uncle designed the lunar module that put the first man on the moon. So, you know, his company was Grumman that became Northrop Grumman. So I have some connection to these issues. But I think that what you find is that in this huge thousand-headed Medusa that is the military-industrial complex and this transnational corporate interest to deal with these things, that it is so compartmentalized and so secretive that there can be people at very high levels in Washington who really don't know what's going on. In fact, they couldn't find their ass in a well-lighted room with both hands, I hate to say it. And what I have found as I've gone into these meetings is that they're as appalled or more appalled than you are at what's happening. But, you know, because they're trying to stay in the constitutional chain of command and obey the law, they really can't act without our leaders giving them a go-ahead, and our leaders are chicken. So what I have found is that this is why the Disclosure Project put together all these hundreds of military men and women to come forward and tell their story as whistleblowers so that the people will know what the truth is about these matters and how these projects are actually run. I tell people, don't take my word for it. I'm just a country doctor here in Virginia near Monticello and the University of Virginia. Listen to these people who have had top secret SCI, Special Compartmented Intelligence, clearances, and what they have dealt with, and people who had Q clearances and who dealt with things that would really curl your hair, and have seen how this whole operation runs. That's what you'll see at disclosureproject.org. And if you go into this deeply, you will find that at the core of it, you know, a lot of people think, oh, well, you know, is this about little green men or something? I said, hell no. It's about who runs the world and who's calling the shots. And really a group of 200 or 300 corporations and individuals who are in that position who have a death grip on this planet. And I think we have to say, look, it's time to open another chapter in human history and close this one. And if we don't do this with our eyes wide open and do it willingly, it's going to be done for us, because the bottom line is that the Earth simply cannot withstand another 50 years of the kind of madness that we've seen over the last 50 years.
Perhaps you could tell me something about what you've uncovered related to Star Wars initiatives and how those weapons work and what they're being used for.
Well, what's interesting, you know, one of the biggest canards in the whole universe is that the government can't keep a secret. Well, it's true that the government of we the people can't keep a secret, but this secret government can keep a secret. And Paul Hellyer, who was the former Minister of Defense for Canada, is now working with me, and he and I had a press conference last May up in Toronto, and he said point blank, look, there are two governments. There's the government that we elect and appoint, and then there's this permanent government, and that government really is pretty much does what it wants to. And as Senator Inouye said during the Iran-Contra hearings, he says basically there exists a secret government with its own Air Force, its own funding mechanism, its own Navy, etc. What that group has are weapons that are already in space, and they're not being deployed to intercept Iranian or North Korean missiles that would probably just fall in the middle of some ocean somewhere. They're really been up there and been deployed since the mid-60s. Using very advanced technologies to target incoming extraterrestrial vehicles that are completely peaceful, but which these guys have decided to get into some kind of cosmic contest with. Quite frankly,
Bob Bowman, whom you may well know, who directed the Star Wars research program for several years, has recently allowed that the purpose of these weapons in space is offensive, even though they've been marketed as defensive to the American people.
Well, they have always been offensive. And the problem with this is, and this gets into areas that people can't believe could be possible, is that they have been targeting objects of interplanetary origin for some years. And memo to people, yes, we're not alone in the universe, thank God. Number two, we have been visited. And number three, they're not hostile. They're concerned about our hostility because we've gone from horse and buggies to traveling in space and having weapons of mass destruction in a matter of one person's lifespan. You know, my grandmother was riding around in horse and buggies in post-Reconstruction South to seeing her son build the thing to put the first man on the moon. So I think that we have to understand that we live in a universe that's very conscious, and that has intelligent life in it, and that a big red flag went up over Earth after we started detonating atomic weapons in the 40s.
What are some of the types of these weapons that you're discussing that are space-based?
These are all energy and electromagnetic systems. They are not solid missiles in the way that you would normally think of them. The ones that are very sophisticated deal with so-called longitudinal or some would call scalar electromagnetic waves that are used to target objects and destroy them. And they're very powerful. Some of the ones that are based both in aircraft and on the ground use high-powered electromagnetic pulses that are generated without the need of a nuclear blast and are quite destructive. And so these are systems that are destabilizing to the entire world order, as I see it, but the agenda behind them has certainly not been discussed openly in the media.
Stand by. We'll be right back. This is Jim Fetzer with my special guest, Dr. Stephen Greer. You're listening to The Dynamic Duo. My special guest today, Dr. Stephen Greer, has been supervising a worldwide search for alternative energy sources with a plan to identify and develop systems that will eliminate the need for fossil fuels. Steve, you mentioned the amazing coincidence how 9/11 took attention off of the development of these alternative energy sources. And I just want to ask if you could, suspend judgment with a hypothetical question. If it is the case, as those of us who have been investigating 9/11 are very confident that, and if you read books like David Ray Griffin's The 9/11, the New Pearl Harbor, or The 9/11 Conspiracy, which I've just edited with contributions from 11 different experts, if it actually was orchestrated by the government, can you think of any reason why weapons of the kind you've been discussing could not have been used for the purpose of bringing about the effects that were observed in New York City, for example?
Well, there are a lot of technologies that are classified that could do that and more. And I think that if you start getting in, for example, one of the Air Force guys that are in our book called Disclosure, which people can get at disclosureproject.org, was in Canada at an Air Force facility in 1953 and saw an electronic system set up that allowed for a large object to have a resonant frequency put around it and have it disappear from that location and reappear intact instantly in another part of the building at this Air Force base. We have other people who've worked in projects like this. The electronics and the electromagnetic work that's been done on these types of weapons and the ability to, it's just really astonishing. I mean, some people say, well, it sounds like Star Trek or something. I said, yeah, well, pretty much anything you can imagine has already been done. In fact, Ben Rich, who was the head of Lockheed Skunk Works, told three people on my team before he died of cancer some years ago in the 90s that basically anything you can imagine we've already done at Lockheed Skunk Works, and that these are locked away in these very covert projects. And he said that it's a shame because they would benefit humanity, but it would take an act of God to ever get them out to do so. And I think that what people have to understand is that our tax dollars have, over the last 50 years, and we're talking trillions of dollars in classified spending, have developed some wondrous new sciences and technologies that are held by a very small number of people and which could benefit us tremendously instead of being used for nonsense. And I think, or for destructive purposes. And I think this is one of the real, sort of existential issues facing the entire human race, is that do we embrace these new technologies and vow to use them peacefully, or do we let a kleptocracy of really, I think, in a sense, very unstable sociopathic people run with these technologies and endanger our entire world security?
And, of course, basically you've been suggesting that the government is being run very much along the lines of the mafia, and I think it's the gas and oil companies that are pulling the strings, ultimately, if I read you correctly.
Well, partially. You have to go beyond the actual gas and oil and look at the financial system behind it. Remember, the entire global finance system is really based on the petrodollar and has been since the World War II era. And I think that you're really looking at enormous financial power, which translates to geopolitical power. For example, if the technologies that we've learned about were to be known by the public, every little village in India would have its own source of energy generation, clean energy. It would be free once you had the generator in place. Transportation, everything would change. Well, what that means is that you would have this blossoming of the world economy, the elimination of poverty, but you would also lose the centralized grip that this group has on the world geopolitical stage and that they exercise through economic domination and control. So these are the really huge issues that are behind much of the games that are being played. And, of course, the mainstream media generally only stops at sort of reporting the first level of what's happening. So-and-so blew up something here. Well, you know, yeah, that's fine, but who did it and why and what's really behind this and what's the situation that's been developing for the last 50 years that has engendered this entire dynamic? And I think that's the questions that need to be asked, or the deeper questions.
Well, I can't let you go today without asking you to pursue that role of the media in promoting the government agenda in situations like those you're investigating and related to events of 9/11.
Well, this has happened a great deal. For example, with our project, disclosureproject.org, we had the executive producer of ABC News want to do an entire expose on this using all of these top-secret military whistleblowers. He had his team at this disclosureproject.org news conference at the National Press Club. After this, he said, look, I want everything you have. We're going to do a big expose on this. So I gave him 35 hours of digital, edited down from 110 hours of digital videotape of these brigadier generals and colonels and all these people speaking. A couple weeks later, he calls me back. He says, well, Dr. Greer, I'm afraid we can't do this. I said, you said you had control over 2020 and Primetime Live and ABC News. What's the problem? He says, well, they won't let me do it. And I said, Ira, who are they? And he said, Dr. Greer, you know who they are. And it was very ominous. And it was obvious that the corporate bosses at ABC says, no, you're not. And so they pulled it. And the same thing, we've seen this over and over again with lots of the media, the Washington Post, the New York Times. We've seen this happen on CNN, for example, where they'll start to cover some of this, and then it gets pulled. And it isn't for the lack of dispositive proof or evidence or direct testimony. You know, if you had three people testifying to the president having a peccadillo with a bimbo, it would be nonstop and you'd be impeached. We have hundreds of these people with documents that are top-secret documents, and you can see them at disclosureproject.org. We even have radar tapes of these objects zipping around in ways that no traditional propulsion system would allow, handed over to us by the man in charge of the FAA for investigations, and who was the third-ranking guy at the FAA during the Reagan years. And yet, interestingly, there's this news blackout on all of this. Well, you have to ask, come on, what's going on here? So people who think we still have a free press and a free media, hello, this is another fantasy. You know, if you believe that, I've got a bridge to sell you. But anyway, that's, you know, one of the big problems, I believe, is the corruption of the very big mainstream media and the extent to which they have been infiltrated. Now, if you go to our website, you'll see that I wrote an article called Media Play, and it has a link to a CIA document from the early 90s that states, and I'm paraphrasing here, but you can read it, it's on page 6 of the document, that says that the agency has people at all the world's major media, wire services, broadcast networks, etc., to spin or control or alter stories to their benefit, and that it's been a very effective program. Now, you know, this was released under a FOIA request, and then I understand later reclassified. But
what was the date of that document, Steve?
I'll have to pull it up. Yeah. I think it's 1991 or 92. It was during the late Bush, Papa Bush years.
Because Carl Bernstein published an article in the Rolling Stone in 1977 in which CIA officials were boasting of their success in taking control of the major news figures in the American media and claim their greatest successes have been with CBS, with Time Life, and with the New York Times.
Yeah, and of course, you know, this matter that I've been dealing with, I have personally been involved in very, very high-level mainstream media people who wanted to cover the story and who were then, sort of like in the book Into the Buzzsaw that Gore Vidal wrote the foreword for, they were cut down or shut down or stopped from doing so. And I'm talking very senior executives in these news entities. So you know, you have to ask what's going on here and how much of a free press do we really have? And that's why programs like your own and the Internet are very important.
Dr. Stephen Greer, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I hope we'll have a chance to do it again, and I want to compliment you for your research and wish you well.
All right, thank you.
For our audience, thank you all for listening. Stand by. We'll be back for the second hour of The Dynamic Duo. This is Jim Fetzer, your host.